Welcome to ACMN Conversations, a podcast where we usually speak to people about arts, marketing, and media matters. You might recall we spoke to David Mann back in June about Entertainment Assist and his experience in the media. We also spoke to him at the time about his more community-based career and connections beyond these two interests of his. So today, to celebrate Blue Ribbon Day and all that our emergency services and first responders do for us, we wanted to bring you the conversation we had about David's amazing experiences with the Blue Ribbon Foundation, not to mention a few other left of centre organisations. So we'll pick it up where we left off.
When I was broadcasting on 3RW, I'd always do a bit of a wrap-up of the news overnight in the emergency services. And one of the fire brigade guys rang and he said, you're really good. He said, you want to come and see the station? I said, yeah, I would actually. I don't understand what happens from when the, what do you have, bells, lights, whistles, when you have to go, what do you think? He said, oh, come on up. So I went up to Eastern Hill. This is in Melbourne, Victoria, and the big fire station. And they said, look, we'd love you to jump on the truck, but that's not possible. The civilian's not allowed on a fire truck. I said, well, let's see if we can do something about that. So a year to the day, there was a contract between the company that owned 3RW and the Metropolitan Fire Brigade of Melbourne, a contract that allowed a civilian, David Mann, to ride fire appliances. And so I said, okay. And no, this was honorary. I wasn't getting paid. And
this is every little boy's dream.
Yeah, well, they weren't. Well, you think that initially because you get there and you think, oh, okay. And they said, and first time I turned up was in a sports jacket, open neck shirt. And they said, hey, come on, we've got to get you some gear. So some of the guys gave me their boots, another one gave me his jacket. And so you think, yes, a little boy's dream, but then the reality hits. Mm. My adrenaline was going and jumped in the truck and off we went. And the first one was a couple of false alarms. But then you go to a fatality where the rescue salvage are cutting deceased people out of cars, or you go to a house fire where, children have passed away.
Mm.
And it's what they do, but to be a media person, to actually understand it and see it, then you can appreciate more. So it started with the fire brigade, and every Friday night I'd turn up at 6 o'clock and work till 8 o'clock in the morning. And sure, we had our laughs and, you know, a few, there were 40 people on shift, but I went on every truck. So whatever moved, they'd put me on it. So some of them would be on a particular truck and they wouldn't move. So it was an awakening, but the best thing that happened to me, they said, right, you're going to be, you know, sort of some media, you know, person who's, oh, you know, this and that. And I said, no, I want to just be like you. So they initiated me. They gave me a real talking down and said, look, we want you to learn about what we do. You'll come with us. You'll get in there. You'll get dirty. You'll get, you know, whatever. You'll learn stuff. So I actually went and did some courses with the Metropolitan Fire Brigade, their training college.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot about the gear, and sometimes they'd have me help them with supervision. But I became one of the team. And I loved it. The guys were fantastic. There's women now who are in the fire service. In those early years, there were not, but now it's evolved.
Yep,
that, women, men, firefighters. And I learned so much about it. So I'd go on air without talking about the place or the name, but say, you know, we went to a big fire in Hoddle Street and blah, 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 blah. And it was a real awakening. And I used to enjoy a beer or a glass of wine when I was driving, but after two shifts and seeing what speed and alcohol do, I have never, ever had a drink when I'm driving, ever.
Yeah.
Even when I go to a vineyard to do a man about town, they say, oh, you got to sample the Semso Blanc. And I go, oh, look, I'll just buy a bottle and take it home. No, I have some now. And I go, no, thank you. And they go, not even a sample. I go, no. So it changed my life in a lot of ways where, first of all, I understood what the fire brigade did, the firefighters, they're not firemen, firefighters. Then I understood what happens out there when you're affected by it, because quite often I was the person left talking to the lady or the gentleman on the nature strip as their house is burning, comforting them and saying, look, you know, get the kids here, let them sit in the truck. Or I sort of became the public relations person. So to complete the trifecta, then the police said, David, we hear you talk on air about the fire brigade. What do you know about the police? And I said, well, you know, I know what you do. Well, no, you don't. And either do the media. And it was a wonderful person, Deputy Commissioner John Frame with Victoria Police. He said, right, I want you to go out, keep your trap shut, keep your wits about you, suit and tie, and you'll report to the duty inspector at Russell Street. And Russell Street was the big police headquarters.
Yeah,
so
wasn't it?
Ooh. I was doing the fire brigade on a Friday night. The Saturday night I'd do the police.
You're a sucker for punishment.
Yeah, and it was challenging. Some of my lifelong friends have come from that. The duty inspector, a chap called Gary Jamieson, he was terrific. He always had time when we came back from doing a job to sit and explain what happened and why it happened. And in the end, after 6 months, I said to Mr. Frame, I said, I couldn't do the job. And he said, why? He said, you're smart and you're fit. I said, no, the frustrations, because everything policing is based on evidence. And you'd go somewhere and you knew somebody was breaking into cars or unfortunately they'd bashed somebody, but you've got to have the evidence. And the best...
Yeah, so frustrating. That's the right word, isn't it?
Yeah. And the best quality of a police officer is communication. I found that, you know, there's some of them, they're big men or big women and they can handle themselves and look after themselves, but if they talk to people, a lot of it's solved by that. So that became the double where I became the police person. And then the ambulance said, well, hang on, we're here.
We want a part of this.
So it was out on the ambulance and I was stationed in Latrobe Street on a Ford Transit ambulance with two MICA officers. And that was another eye-opener. I mean, I saw people save lives.
Mm.
I'd be there and they'd say, on your own, a call, you're going to Tullamarine, three-year-old with asthma or whatever. And they'd say to me, David, we're the only ambulance heading that way. We're the only available. And it was MICA. And they spoke softly. They spoke with their eyes. Nothing was ever panicked. And people were almost deceased and they saved lives. And I said, you do this, I'm doing this one shift a week and you do this all the time.
Day in, day out.
And then I went to some doctors we know and they said, David, if you got the paramedics, they are the people who save the lives, stabilise you and get you to the hospital. And there's normally two of them or a backup. But they said, we have anaesthetists, we have oral surgeons, we have ventilator operators, we have everybody as a team and we're proud of what we do. But unless they can get you here...
Yeah.
So, I spent a lot of time and still doing it. I'm still working with the microambulance now. And look, I know it's audio, but I still wear a pager. Look at that.
Oh, wow.
People say,
seen one of them for a long time.
It's a pager. So I'm still involved with Victoria Police, with Ambulance Victoria, and it's now called Fire Rescue Victoria. But very proud of the men and women. The emergency services, it's okay to think you know what they do. It's okay to watch reality television and some of it's so far off the beam. But to understand that my wife was really good because sometimes I'd get home and she'd just look at me and I'd just sit there and have a cup of tea and I wouldn't talk because I really couldn't talk about what I'd seen. And I'm sorry for getting a bit emotional before, but sometimes I have these images of the innocent people, you know, in road accidents or the innocent people in fires that just something's happened and there's, you know, some people deceased and the others have managed to get out. But it happens. While we're sitting here talking, they're three services that 365 days a year, 24 hours a day they're working. And then there's the extension of the SES and the Red Cross and Parks Victoria and all those people, you know, they hate the word, but in many circumstances, they risk their life for other people.
And we've been talking about mental health in the entertainment industry. I mean, mental health and being able to care for your mental health in this first responders industry is just a whole nother world too, isn't it? They just what they see and what they have to, you know, dust themselves off and keep going. It's quite
the suicide
phenomenal.
Rate in the emergency services is not acceptable. And mental health and wellbeing, chief commissioners of Victoria Police are onto it. The head of the ambulance service in Victoria, Tony Walker, Professor Tony Walker, Shane Patton, the chief commissioner of Victoria Police. They know that
there's a job to be done.
15, 20 years ago, it was like you talked about human resources or occupational health and safety. It didn't exist. But now mental health and wellbeing is a major priority, not only for those serving, but for the people who, the veterans or the retired community, who are still suffering. So it's a big agenda item.
Yeah, as it should be. And I believe you're still chairman of the Victoria Police Blue Ribbon Foundation.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about their remit and how does that come together?
It's sort of the time I'm talking to you is one of the most difficult times, Lyndall, because 2020 was the biggest single loss of life in Victoria Police's history, with four members being killed on the Eastern Freeway. And the Blue Ribbon Foundation is there to honour those 170 police officers who have died in the line of duty, but also to honour those serving today. So I was the inaugural chairman of the Blue Ribbon Day Community Council and now the chairman of that and the chairman of the Blue Ribbon Foundation. And we're there to raise funds, not to give to police, but to create living memorials. So around hospitals around Victoria, regional, rural, and of course central, we have life-saving equipment that is named in honour of a police officer who's died in the line of duty.
Oh, wow. That's
and so you amazing. Go there, you do the dedication, you have the family members, and they're so proud to see the names up there. And there are the names that we all know, the Silk Millers and the Tynanairs and the Angela Taylors. You know, there have been massive stories, but there are so many police just doing their job day to day who have died in the line of duty, some of them been murdered. One of my board members, a young man, Paul Moore, his father was murdered. Mm. And he sits on my board, and when we have a campaign or an idea, I look at him and I say, Paul, and he goes, yes, Chairman. I say, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
And that's the reaction if we have the dedication at the St Kilda Road Police Memorial. I go to the relations of the Silk Miller, the Tynanair, the Taylor, the families. And I say, look, it's wonderful. We've had the Prime Minister or the Premier or the Lord Mayor or all these dignitaries, but you're the families. Are you happy? And it's really just remembering them. And so it's the foundation is there to raise funds. We had to reinvent ourselves during 2020. All the events that we have, the ball and the golf days and the walk runs, all cancelled.
Yeah.
So we went heavy on merchandise, and we had Victoria Police Blue Ribbon face masks, as in the masks you had to wear.
Yep.
And
terrific
all of a sudden,
initiative.
We raised $100,000.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And so that's the foundation. Blue Ribbon Day is September the 29th every year, and that's services all around the state, all around the country, because it coincides with National Police Remembrance Day. And I say to people, I do it all the time because nobody knows what you look like. They hear your voice, but they don't know you. And I walk up to members whenever I see them, or PSOs, you know, a lot of them on the right. I just go, excuse me, sir or madam. And they look at me and go, oh, yes. And I go, I just want to say thank you. I extend my hand when you're allowed to shake hands. And I say, thanks for what you do. And they go, oh.
Nice to be acknowledged.
Thank you. They don't actually know what to say.
Yeah.
But I do it publicly at the ball when we have 1,200 people there. And I ask all the serving members and those veterans to stand up. And I don't have to say anything. The applause just starts.
Happens, yeah.
So that's the Victoria Police Blue Ribbon Foundation, but occasionally you have a laugh too. So
So all that community work, has there been, it's going to be hard for you to choose one, I imagine, but one highlight that you can remember, something really rewarding or a really special moment through it all?
Oh, that's like asking you your favourite musical.
Yeah, it's tough.
I think we've spoken a lot about Entertainment Assist. We've spoken a lot about Blue Ribbon. But being the chairman of the Mount Macedon Memorial Cross Committee of Management, I was a trustee years and years ago in Victoria. There is a place called Mount Macedon.
Gorgeous.
On the top of Mount Macedon is a big cross that was there for those who served in World War One. And during Ash Wednesday in 1983, it was severely damaged by the bushfires and there was a big cyclone fence around it. The rain, the hail, the sleet and the snow had corroded the tiles and it was in disrepair. And so you go there and here's this great memorial to those who served in World War One with the cyclone fence around it. So we had to, as a committee, try and raise some funds to rebuild it. And you think everybody cares, but of course the locals, you know, were caring, but for the bigger picture, maybe not. And we were only in the thousands of dollars and it was going to cost a couple of million. And I went to a man called Bruno Grollo. Bruno Grollo.
Familiar name.
A builder. And he was in the Rialto Towers and I had a meeting with him and he'd built the Rialto. And this was before Eureka Tower or before any of the other big projects. And I said, Mr. Grollo, I'm wondering whether you could help us. We haven't got much money at all, but could you help us with the labour, or could you help us with the products to rebuild the Mount Macedon Cross? And he just looked at me and I thought, oh, this is going to be a short meeting. And he has the biggest hand and he shook my hand. He said, we'll help. I said, oh, thank you. And to cut the story very short, he took a container up there, and in amongst the rain, the hail, the sleet and the snow, he, with his builders, rebuilt the cross. And as they were building it, I used to go up there and say, this is fantastic. I said, but Mr. Grollo, Bruno's the name, he said, even if I sold my house, I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, who's paying for this?
He said, it's all right, we'll just get it done. And he was frustrated because he said he could have built the pyramids quicker because he had to deal with the RSL, Heritage Victoria, the local council, and all these people were very cooperative. But, you know, there's so many things.
Yeah.
So he built it as a solid structure, and it was getting on and on and on. And I thought, what is going on here? And then the premier of the day was Jeff Kennett. And we're going to do the dedication. And I said, look, I'm really worried this is going to be on the front page of the papers that we haven't got the money. And he said to me, he said, David, you know my brother Reno? I said, yes. He said, have a guess where my father used to bring us when we were little boys. And I said, I know you live in Preston and that area. He said, yes. And he said, we would come up here for day trips. So he said, you will never see a bill for this. And they built it, and there's a plaque there that thanks the Grollo families, which they said, well, you don't even need that. But I always talk about it because people like to pick on tall poppies or whatever. But Bruno Grollo, Reno Grollo, with the cooperation of all those authorities, built it. And that's something I'm really proud of, that it stands there. And I'm also proud that over the years we've rededicated it to Second World War as well, and all other conflicts. So on my board now I have a Vietnam vet, we have RSL representatives, but it's for Iraq, Iran, the Falklands, all the different places. You know, there's probably 20 different conflicts that we've had. It honours those men and women and those serving today. So that was something that was, everybody said is impossible, but it stands there today, and it wasn't impossible. So it's a highlight. It's probably, there are other ones I think of, you know, when I was chairman of Royal District Nursing Service, I was chairman of that for some years and a board member, and those were nurses, and they are nurses who go into the home and wound management and amazing things, amazing people. But one of the highlights of my life was we had a Christmas party at a big, big race course in Melbourne. I stood up and all the board members are in the front table and I said, well, as chairman, I've got to say, we couldn't afford to pay you what you're worth. You see the board members going, I can't believe the chairman said that. I said, because you are doing so much of it from the heart and you meet these good people in life. And yeah, I'd love to be able to say to every nurse and every support worker, we're going to pay you double. Well, we couldn't do that. But just really good people that you say to people, get out there, get on a board, a trust or a foundation and start giving back and you'll feel better for it. And so, you know, 90% of my paid work went out the door last year. But I was busy in the philanthropic area and I felt good because hopefully, it's for other people to judge that, but hopefully what I and the teams do, and there's nothing about an individual. People say, oh, you're the chairman. I go, I'm the chairman of a great board. Or boards now, eight of them.
Yeah.
But it's the teams. And when I was given that Australian honour, the journalist wanted to talk about David Mann, the person. I said, no. I said, I'm happy to do an interview, but I want to get a mention for these different charities and these different organisations. And they went, okay. So it was great because it was about the organisations rather than the individuals.
Yeah, there's so many satisfying and fulfilling memories there. That's really, thank you for sharing all that. That was really lovely. I have got one more award that I noticed on your CV that I need to ask you about. It's the life membership of the International Order of Old Bastards. Now, what is that?
Okay. I don't swear. I was a Blackburn High boy and I used to swear a lot. And when I started at 3AW in 1973, Mr. Norman Banks, was one of the doyens of radio. And he said, David, it's not Meyer, it's Maya. And you're not going to Flinders Street Station, you're going to Flinders Street Station. And he said, I suggest that perhaps you're very careful because if you go on air, and I was on air very quickly at AW, almost as the office boy, you can't swear. It doesn't do anything, and people who swear really aren't that great a leader. So I've always remembered it. And the funniest man I've ever met in my life, Victor Borger, comedian, never said a swear word. Funny. So I was asked by the International Order of Old Bastards to go along and be a guest speaker at their lunch. And I said, I beg your pardon, like is it a strip club or something? And they said, no, we have a wonderful sponsor, the Crown Entertainment Complex, and we have a group of men who raise money for necessitous circumstances. And I said, oh. And they said, they're all 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100-year-olds, but if somebody needs a train fare from Warrnambool to see a sick child in the hospital, we pay for the train fare. Or somebody needs a dishwasher. Or somebody needs tyres for their car. In necessitous circumstances. So it's not giving $100,000 to somebody. So I said, well, I'll come along and have a chat. So I gave a speech about people I've met in my journey in entertainment and they loved it. And then they said, oh, you know, would you like to come to a lunch? And I said, yeah, I'd like to sit there and, instead of having to be the speaker. And they're really good people. Really, really good. And Lyndall, they might raise $1,000 in a lunch. But they have these lunches and then they give the money out and the people make a difference. So I don't know why, but they said, we really, because one of the headlines was, that man's an old bastard. In the Herald of the day, that man, M-A-N-N. And my dear father looked at it and he rang me, he said, son, he said,
what have you done?
I haven't read this yet, but I said, Dad, you better read it. And he read it and he said, okay, I understand what it's about. So then they said, would you become the patron? And I said, wow, that's a bit of an honour. And they said, we know you can't come to every lunch, but would you be the patron? And I said, yes. So it was really awareness again, Lyndall, just for talking about their organisation. But we have a ladies' luncheon every year in October where all the wives or partners come along, 300 or 400 people. And that one I interview ladies.
So, isn't that fabulous?
But the best thing is approaching them because I rang Jean Pratt and I said, Jean, it's David. She said, hello, because everybody goes Jeannie, you know, and her name is Jean. And I said, Jean, I'm wondering whether you would speak at a luncheon and just wondering. She said, no. She said, I don't stand up and speak. I said, well, what about if I interviewed? She said, oh, yes, I'll do that. I said, okay. So I'd love, because I love Jean Pratt. She's just a beautiful woman. And so I said, well, Jean, I'm about to say something what it is, but I don't swear, so just understand. I said, it's the International Order of Old Bastards, and you'll be the guest speaker. And she said, and she laughed. She said, really? And I said, yes. And then you're given a trophy at the end that you're an old bastard. She came along. It was unbelievable. She walked into the room. There were 40 tables of 10, and she said, oh, have you got a moment? And I thought she might want to go to the ladies first or whatever. She went to each table and said, hello, my name's Jean. Thank you for having me here today. So by the time she sat on the top table, there were 400 people going, we know who Jean Pratt is, and wasn't that wonderful? You could have heard a pin drop. I'm normally meant to interview somebody for 30 minutes. We went nearly an hour.
Yeah.
And she talked about her late husband, Richard. She talked about her sons and her son and daughters. It was unbelievable. So I've had lots of various people over the years, and so that's very special to me. But once again, it comes up in every CV. I'm at Government House working and the aide goes, and Mr. Mann is chairman of Victoria Police Blue Ribbon Foundation and chairman of the Mount Master Memorial Cross. He's on the Chisholm Institute board and he is the patron for the International Order of Old Bastards, Your Excellency. But what it gives me an opportunity is to explain what they're
now
about.
Now you can start talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, so that's what it's about. It's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. So, you know, you have a tie, a special tie, and a badge. It's funny, I went through customs and I forgot I was going to LA and I had the badge I'd worn it the week before. And you know, open up your case. What's that about? So I explained. He said, oh, he said, that's great.
Isn't that
he said, I'm based in Melbourne. Can I come to a lunch? I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
So border security have been there.
I like it.
I hope you enjoyed that extra time with David and an insight into the community boards on which he sits. Blue Ribbon Day is such an important day to take a moment to consider our brave police officers who have lost their lives in the line of duty and be grateful for the work they do in our community. So thank you again, David, for sharing your story and insights. please wear a blue ribbon or tie one to your fences and let our police and their families know we appreciate all that they do for us. You can find out how to donate at remember.org.au.